want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 171 of the Geocaching Podcast, Creative Cache Containers 2, recorded live on September 14th, 2010. If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444, and our Talkcast ID is 7525. You can join our live chat room, which is geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now to Participate button on the right. We have a voicemail line 206-350-3GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode is brought to you by Cache Advance. See cache-advance.com for all your caching needs. Welcome back, Daryl. How's it been since last week?
Oh, it's been pretty busy. We hit the Metro Parks Geocaching Adventure 2010 picnic, which was Waypoint GC2C886, and grabbed some caches with some of our caching buddies, Southline Trekkers, Nurse Nana, Paddling Pirates, and A2 Queen Cacher. And all seven of the caches that we hit during that event hadn't been published yet. So since they hadn't been published, you couldn't use the geocaching app on the iPhone. So what I ended up doing is using geocaching with Geosphere, but had to hand enter all the data. So it was a little bit of a pain. The yeah. The cool thing, though, is that at least you can do it. And of course, you know, they had the GPX files there that they were loading into all of the GPSs. So we had it on our Garmin units. But you can't load an iPhone because it doesn't allow the file transfers. So the workaround that we've done in some of the events that we've helped with is we'll have the GPX files queued up in an email just ready to send. And I'll have a whole bunch of those. So that all I have to do is enter in the email address with the person standing right there and then hit send. And since it's already queued up and on the server, it doesn't really take any data to speak of. It's just, you know, typing in the email address and hitting send. But you have to do it through like the web mail to make that work efficiently. But what that allows you to do is anyone who's got something like a Geosphere, iGeocacher, GeoBeagle, or CGeo can then just open that up from their end and load it right in. Or if they have a netbook or whatever and they want it, it's just a really quick, easy way to get that around. And I want to say that we've been doing about a dozen of those at a lot of the local events because it really does make it a lot easier and people just have it then. So it's a great way to do it. And for those of us who are using these smartphones, it's about the only way without hand entering to get those special event caches in. So really nice. The problem still is, though, because they're not published by the time you try to go and log them. You know, in this case, I had all but two that were published that night, so I got to log five of the seven, but I still have to wait on a couple of the two because they weren't published. You know, you can't log until it's published. So
yeah, that's true, definitely.
Kind of a pain, but, you know, hey, you know, it works, and it's, you know, cool workaround.
Yeah, it is, definitely. It's one of those handy things that if you're at an event, it's great to have somebody who's got those ahead of time.
Oh, definitely. And, you know, of course, it's always great to have the laptops and get everything loaded. You know, how much of a pain would it be, even with the wireless transfer that we're getting in so many of these GPSs now, to go and have to try to transfer each of those things individually, which takes, I want to say it's about 90 seconds between the two Oregons that we tested to get the caches to go across. You know, that's quite a lot of time.
Yeah, it definitely is.
What's been up on your end, though?
Well, I got an FTF this week. We were over at my in-law's house, and I had my iPod with me, and I happened to check my mail and see that a cache is published, like, not too far from there at all. It's on one of the trails that I have most of my caches on. And so I said, Julie, you know, we need to go out, run out, and get this cache. She didn't end up going with me, but I said, can I use your iPhone, since I didn't have my GPS with me? So unfortunately, she didn't have any of the geocaching apps on her phone. So I just basically went into the geocaching webpage and told it to open up the map and then from the map. I had the map of where the cache was and told it the location find me and just walked towards that pretty little red pin. And we found the cache and we were FTF on it.
You know, that's not a bad way to do it, for people who want to be cheap about it, too, for, getting started, don't know if they're going to get into it or whatever. But have you actually looked for that intro geocaching app that they published?
I have, and I've used it a couple times, not on Julie's phone, but I on someone else's and kind of looked at it. And I've never actually found a cache with it because I'm so used to the full version. But I did look at it and notice that it does work really well, but it's hard to pick up, if you're going to do a lot of caching, you don't want to definitely use that.
Oh, no. But again, it's a great way for people to get started and try it without any investment at all, because that's another one of those free apps.
True.
The geocaching app from Groundspeak was updated to version 4.1.1 this week with minor bug fixes, then again to version 4.1.2 with more bug fixes. Since Groundspeak dropped to get satisfaction, they don't have a current place to post those release notes. The short version seems to be that both of these were minor bug fixes, though.
Also, speaking of geocaching apps, Geocaching with Geosphere version 2.3.1 for iOS was released this week with minor bug fixes and enhancements. For details about these changes, please see the release notes, and we'll have a link to that in our show notes for this episode over at geocachingpodcast.com.
A ring of thieves was captured in Nashua, New Hampshire, reported to be using Facebook to target their victims. WMUR reports that 50 home burglaries were committed by these three or more people. According to a follow-up by Facebook, police in Nashua were not only able to confirm that there was only one home targeted through Facebook posting, but it also was not done through Facebook places. And they're not even certain that this one was actually targeted through Facebook. They just were able to confirm through Facebook because it was a friend of theirs. Police estimate that they were able to recover between $100,000 and $200,000 of stolen property and warn social media users to be careful of their postings on those services. We'll link to the stories for WMUR and for Mashable's website on our show notes.
Geocaching question of the day. The Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is The Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize those replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Have you ever placed a geocache that had decoy or empty containers? 15% of the devious geocachers that replied said they had placed such a geocache that had empty or decoy containers to throw off the finders. So tell me, have you ever placed a geocache that had decoy or empty containers? Want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Tonight we're going to be talking about creative cache containers. We've talked about this subject way back on episode 104. But we thought we'd rehash it again today, so we're going to be talking today with our past regular guests, Head Hard Hat and Trip Cyclone, for some more insight about creating your own creative cache containers. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Now, this is a pretty great topic. You know, there's so many great creative cache containers, unlike just the normal ammo can or pill bottle or things like that. You know, I know that you guys have both seen some really creative cache containers. And do either of you guys want to start? I know that Head Hard Hat, you create a lot of your own cache containers, and they're pretty creative usually. Talk to me here about where you get your inspiration.
Oh, my absolute favorite inspiration is just walking into the hardware store. If you're a geocacher that invents geocaches, every hardware store within 10 square miles knows you by the first name, and that's pretty much how it is with me. Basically, I go through and walk through especially the plumbing and the electrical areas and just start, putting pieces of stuff together to come up with ideas.
Yeah, it's amazing at the concepts that you can come up with just from, everyday objects.
Oh, yeah, and it's one of those things. Geocachers in general come up with such robust ideas. The main issue I've seen, though, is sometimes you kind of get a little bit over the line that causes some people to raise an eyebrow or two. But as long as your geocaches are safe and have a fun, you know, idea of how to make it, they're always good.
Now, Trip Cyclone, how about you? Anything really interesting that you've done recently?
I have to point out a cache in Portland, and I posted this one recently on my Creative Caches site, and it's called Doctor Who, and I can't really explain too much because it would really give away the surprise, but there's a reason why it's gotten a reputation in that area, and that is just the sheer creativity of how they did that cache and how you go about finding it really just pushes things to a next level, and it's a good cache, and it should be on everybody's must-visit list.
I'm excited already.
Now, I want to remind everyone who's listening live tonight, too, that you can hit... I forget what it is. Andy, is it star 8?
It's star 8. Yes, it is star 8.
Or if you're in the chat client, just hit the request to talk, and we'll try to get you in. And there has been quite a number of... quite a bit of chatter going on about some of this, and Network Cacher is saying, Trip Cyclone, that he's working on a version of your chain link with Nano Idea.
Awesome. I saw that. You'll have to let me know when you, or give me some details privately when you figure out a way to update it a bit.
Can you kind of give a description to the audience who might not have seen that?
I actually got it from another person that I saw this live, and I brought it down to the Kansas City area. And basically, if you go to a hardware store, and which is a great tip, just like Ed Hart had said, you go to their chain, the section of the hardware store where they keep chains, and you can find these almost carabiner-like chain links that you can use to connect two chains together. And what it is you find the ones that you can unscrew. To open it, you have to unscrew something, and there's this gap inside that little piece you unscrew. And the gap, if you get the right one, is just the right size to put a nano inside. So you go, you put the nano inside, screw it back together, and then you go find somewhere where you can put this and blend it in. And I had a spot right next to a chain link fence at a tennis court, and it blended in very well. To the point where some people would actually grab it, and one guy grabbed it and started driving home with it before his kids opened it up and realized it was actually a cache.
That's pretty funny. That's when you know that you have great camouflaged cache containers, when people completely don't even realize it's the cache container and take it home with them.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I know, Head Hard Hat, you make some pretty interesting things that aren't even, you wouldn't even necessarily think of when you think of the hardware store. You know, like obviously the chain link fence, things like that happen, you know, naturally when you go to the hardware store. Those are things like the PVC pipe. I know that we used recently your idea to create the fire hydrant cache, and Micah created that one and used a PVC tee and kind of paint it red, and you can use it like that. Now, what are some other ideas that you have? What have you done? I mean, I don't want to give too many of your ideas away, because that way, you know, people still have a chance to find your cache containers when they're near you and not know exactly where they are. But can you give us a brief example of things that maybe you wouldn't think of necessarily in a hardware store?
Well, a lot of things that people do. By the way, that was cute when I saw that on Facebook for the fire hydrant. That was really neat. A lot of things that I try to do because people challenge me all the time, and they say, okay, how do you make a regular geocache and camouflage it so that other people, especially muggles, won't find it? So a lot of times you'll find me out in the woods or in urban settings and trying to find different things that we can make to duplicate what's already there. Say, for example, the Evil Nano geocache that I just made, GeoSnippets for just recently, was basically to make things that look like asphalt or tree mold. Not necessarily, you know, you can make it to look like a rock if you want, but I try to get a little more inventive than that. But a lot of times I challenge myself to come up with different ideas for camouflage, and I've been doing a lot of reading about that. And one of the challenges that I came up recently was playing around with different types of glues and ammo boxes and actual camo cloth to camouflage, like say, a small or a medium-sized ammo box so that it fits in with the environment, which is what you really want to accomplish.
Now, Head Hard Hat, we've mentioned a couple of times that you have information on doing this on your website, but can you tell people how to get there and what is it that they can expect to see when they do?
Well, the GeoSnippets themselves are geocaching tutorials. You can go to www.geosnippets.com or just plain Google Head Hard Hat, you'll find us. Those are all geocaching tutorials that are to make, to help basically the new to medium ranged geocachers make geocaching more exciting for them so that they have information right at their fingertip by watching our videos. What I usually do for a lot of the geocaches that I invent is also show you how to make them. Everything from how to create an anthill out of Bondo with a 35 millimeter. Another one's how to make it, like was mentioned before, the things with PVC, like a hydrant. Or another one that's really creative is where I took a 4-inch PVC pipe end and glued it to a patio cement block to make it look like it's coming out of concrete. Things like that, you can all go to geosnippets.com or my blog, and you can find all the information you want about geocaching and how to make all these geocaches there.
And, of course, we'll link to those in the show notes as well. Now, Trip Cyclone, you mentioned your creative cache container site. How do people find that, and what are they going to find there?
Well, I kind of started that about a year ago. It was one of those things where I kept getting these ideas, but I don't always have the ability to make them, but I do like sharing some of them. And the website's real easy. It's creativecaches.blogspot.com. But I try and get at least one or two posts a month that not only look at creative cache designs, but also try, and if possible, provide pictures. But try and draw, provide instructions, materials lists on how to build them, and tips for how to use them how to use them best. We've had some readers that have even posted some great ideas to update some of them. And we don't always look at just the container itself. We also look at, you know, hide methods or creative locations. For instance, we once featured a cache where what the user did is they stood in a spot. They took a video camera and they panned a 180-degree field of view standing right next to where they hit the cache. And all they did is post the video on the cache page, or a link to the video, and they said, you need to go to a spot near the listed coordinates that matches this view. And when you're there, the cache will be within a few feet. And they gave the cache size. And that was just, the cache was just a regular old, like I want to say it was a matchstick container. It wasn't anything fancy, but the method that you had to go through to find it was what made it a very memorable cache. So we feature those too. And we try and feature caches that are already placed, like the Doctor Who cache, or a cache in Nebraska called Happy New Year. And it's just a way to get people thinking about creative cache designs. And some people have gotten back and said they've actually used them. So that's always a great plus too.
Oh, definitely. It's always good to hear people are doing it. And you kind of brought up something else, too, which is one of the great things about making your own containers is that you can update those and make them more relevant to your location and tweak them and make them a little bit more insidious.
Oh, yeah. I was talking with that Hard Hat once because of that anthill cache. And out near here, we just don't see anthills that big. So he let me feature the video for that on the Creative Caches site, and then we gave some ideas for how to upgrade it based off of location to fit it, and maybe adjust it a bit so people who don't have that anthills that big might be able to use it in their area too.
And that's so important when it comes to geocaches in general. You're always going to have the best effect by going out, finding the spot that you want to hide the geocache, and make it match that environment as close as possible.
Now, there are plenty of lots of good cache ideas that are coming through in our chat room here. A lot of them we can't even touch on all of them. There's so many of them. So if you're listening to this as a podcast, or you want to get a good idea of some of these caches that are being taunted in our chat room here, go ahead and go to our website, geocachingpodcast.com, and click on the episode on this episode, which is 171, and there's a link for the chat log. So you'll be able to see everything that everyone talked here in the chat room, and you can get some really good ideas as far as what to place. Now, one of the things that's becoming harder and harder to place is because, you know, bigger caches, you know, in the woods and things like that, because there's not as many wooded places that don't have caches in them. So we're resorting to a lot of places that are necessarily in the city. So what do you guys think? What are some good ideas for cache containers that are maybe in an urban area?
One of the things that you really want to do, and this is, again, just my opinion for this, a lot of times you can do things in little nooks and crannies. There's a lot of concrete in the urban areas. And we're talking city, you know. I know there's a lot of green spots in urban areas too, but when you're talking about city type urban hides, concrete is really, you know, one of the most common things that you're going to see all the time. And there are textured paints out there that have that stone and concrete look. There's also, I've seen in one particular case, a geocache where there was literally your standard brown brick wall. And they actually painted the geocache to fit in the brown brick wall, and it matched perfectly with the grout lines and the color of the bricks and the texture of the bricks because of the textured paint. That's an incredible hide. That's really a lot of fun.
And I would add that when you're doing urban caches, you know, you can find a lot of ways with smaller caches to be creative. And somebody mentioned making them look like insects, and that would be good for maybe a small city park. I once saw one where the person got permission from the building owner, and they had a tiny hole drilled into the outside of one of the bricks on the outside of the building, obviously with permission, and they actually put in something that made it look like a bolt that would be used to attach something to the outside of the building. That one took me and my buddy about 20 minutes to find we sat down for a while to think about it before we just happened to check it and realized the thing slid right out. But on top of that, city urban cache is also a great opportunity to try creative methods. For instance, the picto cache, if you're in an area that's got a lot of really nice, fancy buildings, kind of more of the whole historic downtown areas, you can really do a lot of fun with picto caches where you have a series of pictures and the people go to the starting coordinates and they have to look and find what's in the first picture. They go and they stand at that spot, and now I have to look around and find what's in the second picture, and they just do this over and over again however many times you want until they get to the final location, where you could have a rather simple cache hide, but the journey getting to it is what's creative and what's fun about it.
Yeah, I saw that one on your website, and I thought that was a really cool idea, especially, like you said, if you've got a downtown area that's really descriptive and the buildings are very, very descriptive.
Oh, yeah. And that's an urban hide. It's not easy because you want to make sure you're not hitting a spot that might be sensitive to people being suspicious of your activities. And you also need to make sure that, you know, if you're going to hide it somewhere in your business, you probably want to talk to that business. But you can get just as creative in an urban area as you can in rural areas too.
Yeah, I typically find more creativity in the urban areas because it requires more camo.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Now, camo aside, as far as, you know, like making it actually blend into the surroundings, there are definitely some really cool caches that just, you see them and you go, whoa, those are really cool, but you're definitely a geocache, you know, like the really, really, really supersized geocache ammo container, or, you know, things like the ground grasshopper or whatever, where it's, you know, something that you can obviously tell it's fake, but it was a cool cache container. What are the kind of things that you guys have seen that it's not necessarily great because it blends in, but great because it sticks out and it's just one of those things that you're like, whoa, that's really cool?
One of the coolest ones that I found in recent history, anyways, was one called a blind duck in a duck blind, and this was really cool. It wasn't that it was how it was camoed. It was a log find, with some camo cloth in front of the geocache, which actually worked quite well. I was kind of stunned in what kind of got me going on camouflage in general. What was so cute about it is they literally took this large rubber ducky, painted it with Stevie Wonder glasses on it, and then camoed the box itself with camo tape, and then glued everything together for this whole complete package. So when you move the camo cloth away, here's this duck looking at you in the face. It's that kind of creative that I think makes geocaching fun.
That reminds me a lot of one of the caches we found, which was a skunk hiding under some logs. You know, kind of in where you'd expect to find a skunk, you flip one of the logs up and all of a sudden you're staring at a skunk tail.
I bet that makes you jump, huh?
It did. In fact, it was on a really nasty hot day where you're sweating and it's in the eyes and, you know, you're just like, whoa, gotta get out of here.
That's great.
And then after you run and it doesn't, you know that, you know, it's a cache.
Well, and you know, speaking of one of those experience, ones
too, and it's always great when you have those moments where your heart just skips a beat just before you realize, oh wait, it's fake.
Yeah, and speaking from experience, you don't want to be anywhere near a skunk that's gonna spray, because it does stink really bad.
Yeah. Indeed it does. Now, Trip Cyclone, is there any cache that was featured on your blog, on your Creative Cache Container blog, that really sticks out as something that someone could try to build themselves?
You know what? I've always had a lot of people comment on this one, and I have a very detailed post because I actually built one of these. And I don't remember exactly where it is in there, but if you do a search on there for a lockbox or a locked ammo can, you'll find it. But it's not too hard to do. It just requires a little prep work, and you need an ammo can, and you need a latch lock that you can use to lock the thing shut. And then what you do is you get some travel bugs, and attached to the travel bugs are the keys to the lock. And then you attach a little photo keychain with instructions, as well as the DC code and the final coordinates. So you can list it as a puzzle so that people have to get the travel bug, which could be floating within a specified area. And you can, I put out five of these things, five keys, and they find the key, get the cords off the key, and then they go after the cache, open up the cache, sign the log, and then go rehide the key in another cache.
Yeah, I've seen some of those kind of things. Yeah, definitely. It's nice and easy. You know, I had, kind of changing subjects here, because Dudley Grunt had posted something about birdhouses, and you made me think about it with the kind of multi-cache kind of thing. We had a cache that we found that we really, really enjoyed that was a multi-cache, and you had to go to stage one and get the tool to retrieve this bird feeder that was hoisted up into the trees, and there was no real other clue. It's just go to here, you find this Tupperware kind of container that had the tool to retrieve the cache. And then we finally figured it out. It's about 100 feet overhead, I guess, in the canopy of these trees. And there was about 6 feet off the ground, a connection that you just had to use the tool to lower it down.
Very cool.
That's pretty cool.
That does seem like a real cool one.
One of our most memorables.
Any final thoughts here before we wrap up tonight, as far as anyone who wants to create a cool cache container?
You want to go first, Ed Hargett?
No, just a lot of times when you're creating geocaches in general, remember, common sense is the main rule with this. If you get into things with electronics, and I know they're out there, I know these geocaches exist, where there's things like meters and, you know, parts with electrical things hanging out, things like that, really be careful with what you design and what you think the reaction of not only the geocachers but the people around your environment are going to have. And again, use the common sense when it comes to things like where you place it, because that's so important. Putting something with a bunch of wires underneath a bridge, not a smart idea. Use your common sense. Think about what you're going to do when you put your hide and what the reaction is going to be.
And I'd add to that, also think about the experience of the person finding it, too. Is the person finding it going to go to a spot where they feel comfortable grabbing it? I know I have a cache out there that people have said, you know, this seems like a bad neighborhood. But yet it's hidden in a park. And a lot of times you have to be really careful. If you hide something in a spot where, you know, there's a high crime rate or... you have to kind of think a little bit about where you hide things. And your comment about the bridge and putting something under there, that's definitely a great example. Just think about what would happen if somebody saw a cacher going after that and called it in. I was going along the same lines you were. I was thinking, you know, common sense. Think about what you're going to place before you actually place it, so that, that way you're not actually creating a problem for other people.
Absolutely.
Well, we want to thank you guys for showing up on the show tonight and teaching us a little bit more about your experience with Creative Cache Containers.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank Lisa from Cache Advance for financially making this episode possible. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444, and our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line 206-350-3GPS anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.